Hi and hello, football fans. Your old pal Dave Damashek here. Make sure you check out the Dave Damashek football program. You can watch it on YouTube, NFL.com. You can listen to it on iTunes or Stitcher or NFL.com/podcasts. We look at the world of pro football and the game called life.
The Around the NFL podcast isn't flawed enough for Chris Wesley.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I am joined by a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What's up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
What's
that true?
Happening?
Is that true, Wes, that we're not flawed enough for you?
People confuse my stance on this issue quite a bit, and it's a very hard-line stance. Flawed humans have been through the ringer and have had to check themselves, look in the mirror, make changes, show remorse, show contrition, realize there is more to life. Broken human beings are not to be trifled with. You don't mess with them because they just go around hurting people. They're irredeemable.
Well, so it's about me.
Well, to clarify for anyone, you know, listening for the first or tenth time, you prefer a woman that has some flaws. No one said you were looking for that we weren't broken enough for you. We just weren't flawed enough for you. Because I think what it's saying is, as a podcast, we're perfect. You want something a little less perfect.
I disagree with that. I think the podcast is flawed and recognizes its flaws.
Yes.
I think the podcast is
so weird.
It's in a good spot.
Weird wormhole right off the top.
So if we were a woman, you would go out with us.
Oh yeah, I'd wine and dine us.
Hot. That's sexy.
And I don't do much whining and dining.
Wow. Wes expects the women to come straight to him. You know, he's not going to try to impress them with fancy meals.
Well, it's worked on a number of times.
I'm willing to once they show that they're worth it, but I feel like, especially in L.A., in this dating pool, you have to weed out the really shallow women. And, you know, first date dive bar. Let's see if you're willing to get down with the people.
That was Wes's dating podcast, now available on iTunes.
This is the Wednesday edition of the Around the NFL podcast, sponsored by no one. Still waiting. Anybody out there? Dick's Sporting Goods, we're talking to you. Perfect match when it comes to your product and our product.
They're out there.
They're
out
there.
You're not wrong.
What's up?
But we'll also.
It's like your great white whale.
Yeah, definitely. But we'll also take high-end sponsorships where some of the financial funding, not just funnel, doesn't go straight to ROG, but also to the talent involved. Nike, Apple, Microsoft, and throw one out there, guys.
Well, I mean, if Damashek has McDonald's, how about we go Burger King? I don't believe in their product at all, but yeah. I would take their money.
Okay. Yeah. Or Burger King.
Terrible product.
Okay, we got it, buddy.
Well, they're not going to sponsor.
Not going to get a sponsorship when you're saying that.
I'm just saying. I believe in the transaction, not what they're doing.
On today's show, we are going to get into a little draft talk. The draft is coming up, guys. I believe it is a week from 2 weeks from Thursday. Is that what it is?
That is absolutely correct.
Okay, so it's coming up, and so we've been checking in here and there in the last month or so, with the help of some experts in and around the building of NFL Media. We are lucky enough to have a lot of people under this roof that know what they're talking about when it comes to college. And in the podcast studio today, we'll have Michael Berger. We just call him Berger. He is the producer of a great program, Greg, called Path to the Draft. That's on Monday through Friday. At what time?
It is at 3 o'clock Pacific, 6 o'clock Eastern. Daily. Daniel Jeremiah, our friend who hosts the Move the Sticks podcast. This is really Move the Sticks season right now, draft season, but he's the star, I would say, of the path to the draft.
You got Bucky Brooks in there?
Yeah, no offense to Bucky, but, you know, DJ gets more screen time.
And DJ carries himself in a different way on the campus here at NFL Media. If you notice, there's a little air about him.
Ever since he was offered jobs to run the front office in Tampa and Philadelphia.
Yeah, so we're going to talk a segment we're going to call Draft Trigger Points with Berger. So get ready
trigger
for that.
Trigger points.
Yeah, and we won't even get into what that means.
I thought it was pressure points.
Yeah, it is pressure points.
Listen, draft, it's too late now. It's
no,
trigger points.
I feel like pressure points
it's
is
pressure
better.
Points. You like the alliteration.
Yeah, plus trigger has some bad connotations.
Why?
Well, gun triggers and whatnot.
Oh, boy. Just, it's like the PC pod with Greg lately.
No, it's not PC. I'm just goodness. Saying I like the sound pressure point.
Still recovering from you throwing me under the bus with that Japanese pop music.
Yeah, that was I spoke too soon. I actually asked my wife, Emeka, if she had heard of, I think the Ooh. Song was Pon Pon Pon.
Pon Pon Pon?
Didn't know the song, but when I gave her, you know, the name of the artist, she had heard of her. Wouldn't say she was a fan, but we found out she has 4 million Twitter followers, so she has plenty of fans.
What is her equivalent in American music?
I didn't ask that question. Based on the amount of Twitter followers and just listening to
maybe
her, it would seem like a Selena Gomez type, maybe.
Oh, Gomez.
Sign me up.
She has like 30 million followers.
Well, I was just thinking of like a young sort of airy pop star.
Okay. So she's got like 3.85 million airy. Followers more than Greg.
Wait, that almost, I'll take that as a compliment.
Yeah,
there you go. Take
That's
it.
What I meant.
Take it, buddy. All right, and we're also going to do some news. And before we do that, let's go behind the glass, say hi to the Irishman. What's up, buddy?
Nothing much, Dan. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Brandon is on our softball team. Season kicks off tomorrow, Thursday. And, you know, everybody looked good in our first practice, Wes.
Yeah, I thought we looked pretty good. We got a lot of infield practice in. We came out to the field. Starting to take batting practice, and little kids from Culver City started to swarm the area and just took over everything. We couldn't get much accomplished.
Little monsters.
Kids wanting to play games on a field.
Monsters. Little news. Let's do it. We start on the throne of sleaze.
Pretty gruesome stuff.
Yeah, this is...
Wait a minute.
Ooh, there's nobody left. The New England Patriots used a first-round pick on Dominique Easley in 2014, and Easley did show flashed ability over his first two seasons, missed games with injuries. You expected him to be a big part of their rotation in 2016, but then the news just dropped shortly before we came upstairs. A big surprise. Easley was released by the New England Patriots, as reported by Rap Sheet on Wednesday. Comcast Sportsnet New England first reported the news.
Tommy Curran, Tommy!
And this is the same Dominique Easley who tore his ACL on both knees in college and ended his 2014 season with a knee injury, tore his quad in 2015. However, this cannot just be an injury thing, right, Mark?
Well, yeah, I mean, the timing of it. I mean, right at the minute this happened, 4,000 beat writers in unison. Oh, there must be something else going on here.
Wait, I beat all those beat writers to that tape.
All right, Wes, well, then 4,000 beat writers.
So basically Wes said it, and then everyone else copied Wes. That's
echo chamber. Okay.
What about you, Greg?
I agree with that. Wes said, as we were talking about it before the podcast, you don't just cut guys in April for injury-related reasons. He tore his quad, but we knew that. Months ago, he's a first-round pick, only entering the third year of a pretty cheap contract.
Mm.
Cap issues is not. If anything, they're accelerating their cap hit in the short term by cutting him. So it's curious, and it's especially curious because he played so well last year. Pro Football Focus noted per snap, only J.J. Watt was more productive as a pass rusher, according to their metric. Now, obviously, no one's saying he's the second.
According
best pass
to the
rusher.
Game film I watched, he was easily the Patriots' most effective interior rusher.
Certainly their best interior rusher, and one of their best defensive players per snap. And that per snap is key because he's missed half the games almost in his career. He only played 275 snaps. He tore his ACL twice in college, both knees. So he's had injuries going on forever. Tom Curran, who broke the story, added an update after we came up here that he called
it. Well, we knew that he broke the story, by the way, when you went, Curdog or whatever. Like, Tommy!
Tommy! Tommy. Oh, Tom Curran's the best guy out there in the country.
We got it. Go ahead.
Philosophical differences on following injury programs, etc. He said that's part of it.
So that was my first inclination. Whenever you hear the Patriots surprisingly cut someone, isn't it because they won't get with the program in some kind of way? Either they want too much money, they're not about the team, or in this case, he's probably not following the regimen laid out by the Patriots medical.
Also could have, shown some personality, been an actual human being. A lot of things can happen on Patriot Way.
Yeah, I could only imagine how the that Throne of Ease music would sound if the Patriots had only won, what, how many playoff games in the last 15 years?
This is where I know it's working when he gets all upset.
I mean, they trade away Chandler Jones. Suddenly, I wonder if you're the Patriots, if it forces you to think about the draft a little differently to find people that can get to the quarterback.
Well, I would say defensive tackle was a huge need for them even before this. It's been a huge need for them. That's why they've spent their last two first-round picks on defensive tackles. Dominic Easley, Malcolm Brown, and wouldn't surprise me if they take a defensive tackle pretty high in the draft again, because behind them you really just have some kind of stopgap veterans.
When you see that they signed Pot Roast Knighton, doesn't that immediately trigger the thought they're going to be showing more 3-4 looks instead of 4-3?
There was a bunch of people weighing in saying that too, that it sounds like they're going to shift over.
Well, they're always going to play
both.
Whatever works that year. So, yeah, maybe this year their roster will be set up that way. They tend to not be – like most teams, they're going to play 30 or 40% one way, 30 or 40 the other way. They're going to mix it up. But the next best – really their best defensive tackle last year overall was probably Alan Branch.
Alan Branch had an Indian summer kind of year.
But it just shows you – I think Malcolm Brown has potential, but it was a position they absolutely needed. So to cut him – not getting with the injury philosophical differences program. I mean, that seems.
What if he was lazy and just didn't rehab?
And he has a torn quad.
Yeah.
I don't know. I still think there's going to be even more.
By the way, the quad connects to the knee where he's had major issues.
That's fair.
In other Patriots news, we've been wondering how their backfield is going to look because LeGarrette Blount was not attached to the team. But now he is. He's been reattached to the team. That's one way to state things. Blount, on Tuesday, we learned, has signed a one-year deal with the Patriots worth up to $2 million. Bert Breer of NFL Media added that the deal, $760K in base salary, up to $1 million in incentives. Pats later confirmed the signing. Blount missed the back end of last season with a chip bone in his hip. Rap Sheet reports there's no surgery for that, and he should be ready for OTAs. Greg, are you happy to have LeGarrette Blount back in your backfield?
Yeah, why not? Can't hurt. Yeah, he's a good guy.
He's a good fit. He's been good for them.
Good clubhouse guy. Good for parties.
Well, unless you're on the Steelers.
Right. No, I'm saying he's great for parties. If you want to drive around before a game.
Oaks to the drugs.
Yeah.
This signing really shakes my confidence in Greg's Patriots analysis.
Why?
Because I asked him a month ago when Blount was sitting out there and the Patriots had no backfield. Surely the Patriots are just going to bring Blount back on the cheap.
What did I say?
Greg said, nah, I think they've washed it.
I am surprised that they're going to bother to bring him back. And it did take him a couple months. So clearly if any team in the league valued LeGarrette Blount, he would be playing
Have another visit? I don't think he did.
To me, he has a fairly limited value. But he's just, if you're going to have four running backs, can he be one of them?
He fills a role that nobody else in that roster can fill.
Right now, yeah.
Yeah.
I think they need to draft a running back or two.
Yeah.
Like they have in the past where they drafted two. So, to me, it wouldn't, what does he get? $100,000 signing bonus? As a Patriots fan, I would not mind, $1 million in incentives too. I would not mind one bit if LeGarrette Blount doesn't make the team. That means they're
well, what if
better
they were,
shape.
What if they were like, oh, listen, Gary Blount and Easley.
Gary
Blount and Easley, you just can't have them in the locker room together. So we just got Gary Blount back. Easley's out.
My brother Nick will be happy to know you're bringing Gary back.
I did that for your brother Nick.
Thank you.
There's not enough Garys in the world anymore.
LeGarry.
LeGarry Blount. Blount joins a running back group that includes Deion Lewis, who's coming back from a torn ACL, James White, Donald Brown, Brandon Bolden, and Joey Iosefa.
That's terrible.
They'll find a way, though.
That position.
Right. I say that almost with respect to the Patriots, that the other teams would be screwed with that lineup. But there'll be Deion Lewis, if he comes back in full health, I mean, that completely.
If they had a better backfield, they might have won the Super Bowl last year.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a big factor in them not winning a Super Bowl that was out there to be won.
When's the last time
you saw? Well, with injuries, though. I mean, if Lewis had been healthy, that would have been a completely different situation.
And Blount.
Yeah.
When's the last time you saw a backfield in the playoffs as poor as the one the Patriots rolled out? Steven Jackson walking like two skyscrapers through the field.
Right. Well, maybe how about the Steelers the year before when they didn't have Bell?
Yeah, that's fair.
I mean, if you're going to talk about let's take away the number one and two running back, it's going to be a bad
look. Right, but you're talking about a guy, Deion Lewis, who was just a shot in the dark who started training camp fifth in the depth chart that had injury problems. So, look, it's better to have guys with some pedigree without all those injury problems, obviously.
Josh Gordon missed all of last season, suspended after failing an alcohol test. Had not been reinstated yet, and you started to wonder why hadn't that happened, and we got some light shined on that situation on Monday, or Tuesday, I should say. Rap Sheet reported that Gordon failed another drug test last month. The test showed traces of marijuana and dilute, which could be used to mask substances. As a result of this test, Gordon, his application for reinstatement has been denied until August 1st, a league spokesman told Rappaport. He can reapply after that date. So there is good news. There's bad news, obviously, that it doesn't appear that Gordon still doesn't have his head on straight. The good news, I guess if you're a Browns fan, and certainly Josh Gordon, is that he is still has a chance, it appears, to play this upcoming season, but he's got to, by the time August 1st comes around, he needs to have everything together and not give them another reason. Mark.
Yeah, I mean, from another angle, I think anyone still having any hopes tied to Josh Gordon needs to check themselves at the door, because even if he were to pass this next thing by August 1st, he just sits out there as an, if you're trying to build a team, as an absolute hazard, because at any moment it feels like he's going to get banged with another suspension. 3 years in a row, he did. Now, when he played, he missed two games and still led the league in receiving. So that's tantalizing. That was also in 2013.
But you hold out hope for him.
You know what?
You were really disappointed when this happened.
Well, no. I am annoyed that his lack of accountability is annoying to me. And
sure,
the fact that these players with this drama are attached to it, to the Browns, because really they're trying hard to move forward. And, you know, just the same way that people feel there's an entitlement complex to Manziel, I see it with Gordon too, because he's tweeting out, guys, come on, not a real story, and in videos of him working out. Well, you have a diluted test, and you've failed multiple tests. So it is a real story, and you showed no ability to get healthy and get back into football. Whether or not marijuana should be a banned substance is a whole different subject.
Yeah, I think we're going to look back in 20 years and wonder how these careers were ruined by marijuana, on one hand. But on the other hand, you mentioned accountability. He's letting down teammates. He's letting down the front office. He's letting down the coaching staff. And frankly, no one told you have a right to make millions of dollars playing a kid's game.
And how crazy is it that this guy under this microscope seemingly could not avoid smoking weed or whatever's going on?
Why is he hanging out with Johnny Manziel? And
what's happening here where he, in his mind, thought, instead of keeping my nose clean, I'm going to actually try to, you know, I'm going to still have fun and try to get away with it. It just shows, he doesn't have good common sense, and it's killing the guy. I mean, it's ruining his career.
It's insane how long he has not played for by now, and yet he's on the team. And the Browns don't like being attached to him. Well, they could cut him if they wanted. That's allowed.
I'm not saying they don't like it.
So
but
they could. He shows ultimately what matters in the NFL, because he's been chosen by the Browns by four different regimes, two different ownership groups, that he was more valuable than Holmgren and then Ray Farmer and then Michael Lombardi and Pettine and all those coaches. He's kept his job this entire time while all of those guys have gotten fired. So Gordon, to the Browns as an organization, has been deemed more important.
They lead the league in ghosts. Aren't they still paying Rob Chudzinski?
Right. Well, they probably are still paying Romeo Crennel.
I mean, Rob Chudzinski inherited Josh Gordon. Even he didn't draft him. I mean, it's really crazy.
But, I mean, for a team with zero playmakers.
No, I get it.
Literally zero. It's like – but they're not sitting around – they're not – they have been
clear about
that. But
you're saying that, and you're saying don't have hope. They have hope, or else he wouldn't be on the team. And you know what I mean? And you have hope as a fan because you're saying that.
I don't think he's very expensive, number one.
Right.
And secondly, his contract tolls. There's no reason to just release him right now necessarily.
Well, there is a reason.
If you're
rebooting the machine again.
But and
you want a fresh start, and this guy keeps on getting busted, and it's attaching your franchise to his name.
Yeah, but what's Mark's biggest fear?
A guy going somewhere else and thriving.
Going to the Steelers and leading the NFL in receiving.
Well, and also,
I mean,
by the way,
all pro
up until 3 days ago, the thought probably with this new group of people was he could be back
right
very soon. And now it's he could be back in August 1st. If it was he's going to be suspended another year, I think they would cut him.
I tend to agree. They might as well keep him. And the August 1st thing really surprised me. It showed some leniency and flexibility from the NFL that it's not just not just banished for another year necessarily.
The whole thing feels murky, though.
We shouldn't assume a ruling will come down on August 1st.
No.
It could come down in October.
And we especially shouldn't assume that he passes whatever test is in the meantime, because history would tell you, if you're a betting man, that he fails tests. That's what he does, so he will fail more tests.
I couldn't agree more. I think that he's up there and with Manziel and anyone else in terms of we may never see him play again. The desire does not seem to be there.
Moving on, Eddie Lacy, running back for the Green Bay Packers, out of shape for most of the last year and got a ton of criticism, both from the NFL world, the media, and even then his own head coach after the season ended, has appeared to turn the corner in terms of conditioning. Burt Breer reported this week that Lacy has undergone a transformation, calling it, quote, remarkable, a redistribution of weight from his midsection to his shoulders and arms. Here's what Burt said on NFL HQ on NFL Network. I know the people around Eddie Lacy really feel like the Packers are going to be happy with what they see when Lacy reports for the offseason program next week. So, Chris Wessling, is this a narrative? This would have been good for buy, sell, or hold. Eddie Lacy has lost the weight and is back to being Eddie Lacy. You believe it?
Every ounce of it. No pun intended. But, yeah, of course I believe it. I've seen Eddie Lacy play when he's in shape, and he's one of the best running backs in the league. And Mike McCarthy said in February, I have complete faith that Eddie Lacy learned a lesson, that he knows he can't make defenders miss or shake nagging injuries playing 30 pounds overweight. He said, I'll be confident in April we're going to see a different guy, and even more in July when it really matters we're going to see a totally different guy. He's on that path. He's putting in the work.
Mark's favorite player now, you said.
Well, I mean, he's done P90X, and I think that if you'd look at what happens before and after photos of P90X, and if he went through the program, it's excellent for. I can see exactly what he's describing. That it takes whatever's down in your belly area, and it melts off, and it puts it up into where it's useful, up in your shoulders and arms.
You need to get some type of like sponsorship yourself,
yeah,
Mark.
You pimp out P90X.
Your P90X experience before or after Josh Gordon led the league in receiving?
What are you saying?
Well, I just – like, you have this fond memory of P90X.
Oh, well, no, I did it.
How long ago
was it? I did it when my first son, Luke, was born in 2010, and, like, around – I did P60 because I got about 60 days in, and then it was over. But I restarted it, and I think that it's a complete CrossFit training. It's great for Lacy. He's a perfect candidate to do it.
Yeah, and
for this,
I buy it because by the time – he's going to get back with the team, and then he'll be on the program. I don't know if I buy it long term. It's like – it's one of those things that I buy Eddie Lacy in 2016. Now, if you're a fantasy guy and you're drafting him in 2017 or 18, like, would it shock me if he struggles with his weight again or motivation? Usually those players tend to go up and down throughout their career, but I would bet big on a big Eddie Lacy there this year.
Totally agree with everything you said there.
Moving on, let's talk a little Odell Beckham Jr., former resident of Chris Wessling's Stable of Boys. He had his own suite. But you know what? He moved out of the Stable of Boys. I don't even know if he gave you notice, Wes, because now he's living.
he got kicked out.
Because now he's living with a Toronto-based hip-hop star named Drake.
Yeah, he got evicted.
It's April in the NFL, so we're going to talk about this. Odell Beckham Jr. Told Ronda Rousey of noted television station news gathering source DraftKings TV. That's my guy right there, Beckham said of Drake. Somebody whose mindset is the same as yours and they want nothing but success. They want to be the best. We just click on a level like that. Can you imagine how terrible the conversations, private conversations between these two guys are? All they do, they're talking about how.
It'd be great.
You know, we got to shut out all the haters and be the best. And, you know, we're so blessed. And, we love being the best. We're number one. I'm out.
I'm out. What is it with – we're asking these multimillionaires over and over in the past couple of weeks, who are you living with? And all these, like, dudes are living together all over the place. I mean, what happened to just, I'm rich, I bought a house, have a nice time.
It's a great question. And, you know, the a video popped up in social media earlier this week of ODB in a dance party with a bunch of men. And then there was a photo shoot of ODB with some Patriots because Stephen Ridley's selling a line of clothing. And they're all around this, like, pool. And the pool has statues of women that are, I think, mermaids with bikinis. I mean, I don't know what's going on at Drake's palatial estate.
I couldn't disagree more. I want to hear the conversations. No. I want a reality show, Drake's Backyard. Who wouldn't watch that?
Well, I would not Drake's because I have enough backyard. Odell Beckham in my
Drake's
life.
Backyard, yeah. I mean, what? Oh, like Drake's an idiot. This is a guy who's come up with a pretty outstanding multimedia career. He's made the transition. No one expects. I mean, he's doing pretty well. He's pretty successful. Maybe ODB can learn.
What's your point? I'm not taking shots at like Drake as like a hip hop talent.
Well, you said you wouldn't want to hear their conversation.
They would be insufferable together.
Drake is talented, and Odell Beckham is talented. I don't need to sit them and hear them
the
discussing
egos
their,
on those.
You know,
I don't believe for a second that Greg would listen to their conversation.
I would watch. I promise.
How many episodes of this show that you've boiled up would you watch?
I would
How
watch
many
the show.
23-year-olds do you listen to their conversation?
I would watch the show. It would be – I mean, granted, it would be kind of waiting to see – what ridiculousness pops up. But yeah,
you're DVRing this and going through episodes. You're binge-watching this.
That's the thing. You guys would watch it, too. Drake.
There's
back.
No way no, I'd watch not. That.
West
I don't
wouldn't.
Have TV.
Wes wouldn't.
I think I would certainly check it out, but the idea that it wouldn't be insufferable, the conversation, it would be a hate watch for sure.
Yeah, that might be part of it.
Sounds awful. Like
Shaws of Sunset might be something I'd watch before
but
this.
The joy in ODB's dancing cannot be underestimated. And
he's got to calm down with that.
I wish I was that happy doing anything as happy as ODB is when he's dancing.
It can be.
Irishman said he has a question, guys.
I just want to know, what TV show would you rather watch? Jake? Or Drake, not Jake, and ODB, or Johnny Manziel and Josh Gordon as roomies?
Well, the second show would quickly rule Gordon out of any sort of return to the NFL, so I don't want to see
Manziel
that.
Sounds depressing. Manziel Gordon sounds more like depressing.
Yeah,
your life's going downhill.
Yeah, in today's episode, because a TMZ article that just came out, that Johnny Manziel was in a hit-and-run accident in Hollywood, and then Josh Gordon picked him up on the Sunset Strip, then they had to circle back to the accident because they left the scene of an accident. What's going on here?
It does sound like a reality show because we're getting an episode every two or three days.
That's Brandon, true. I'd rather watch Skip Bayless and Stephen A. Smith debate whether the Warriors should push Kobe Bryant's game off ESPN to ESPN2.
That's crazy. all right, and finally – J.J. Watt, and we were playing that game yesterday or on our previous show, buy, sell, or hold on off-season narratives. And, you know, I found it suspicious that a new J.J. Watt story is popping up every week, like almost like every Wednesday morning. Like, oh, there's a publicist at play here. J.J. Watt, a little bit, you know, I think you know my feelings about the gentleman. Talented ball player. But this week, J.J. Watt appeared in a Snapchat with Kate Hudson, the actress, really a strange Snapchat video with Hudson, and then that sparked, ooh, J.J. Watt, is he taken? And then he tweets out, a reply to a fan who asked Watt how he went from, quote, single to dating two different blondes in 24 hours. Well, you're replying to that, bro. He writes, that's L.A., hashtag single. Get out of here, bro.
Is that L.A., Wes?
Get out of
how the dating
media.
World in L.A. works for me.
Would it work if you were a, you know, potentially a generational type defensive talent with millions of dollars and, you know, multiple homes and all sorts of cash? Would it work for you that way then?
And a sculpted 6'6", 290-pound body? Yeah, I get – what is –
This coupling, though, what you were saying in terms of wanting to be in the news, that is a perfect pairing, Kate Hudson. She, when I was doing my Hollywood analytics blog website, she would lead the league in most magazine covers to lowest box office over the last 5 years. I mean, she has stayed remarkably on top of things and relevant with absolutely no movies or hits or anything, and she does it with stuff like going out with J.J. Watt.
Excellent analysis.
What is J.J. Watt doing in L.A.? Isn't he supposed to be in, like, his Pottery Barn log cabin in Wisconsin?
Yeah, with, like, 37 bunk beds in there.
A lot of these guys do train out here. I mean, Greg, I will point out that once – I don't know how old she is, but once you hit a certain age in Hollywood, it's tough to land heat-seeking roles as a female.
Mm.
I think
you're on an interesting side of the debate there.
That's absolutely fair.
Wait, is this but the I feel, Women in Hollywood podcast this, coming up well, later this summer?
That's absolutely fair, but I think Kate Hudson had maxed out her career as well as she possibly could have. So I think
hashtag nepotism.
By the way, being 6'5" alone would get J.J. Watt all the women in L.A. because I've never seen so many women obsessed with men's height.
Well, it's incredible. Every month.
It's incredible to me. I never it was never a factor in any dealings I had with any woman in my life in any city until I moved to L.A. And now it's like the number one qualification on their list. Are you 6'3" or above? Nope, can't
on the
you.
Online sites.
Well, we should ask.
Wes starts walking around in stilts.
We should ask our upcoming guest here, Michael Berger, walk into the studio. He's lived in L.A. a while, not the tallest guy.
Yeah, we will. And by the way, you're in the nepotism comment on Kate Hudson. I don't think that's fair. Now, did she get into Hollywood? Did it help that her mother is Goldie Hawn, of course? Sure, but when she played Penny Lane in Almost Famous.
Yeah, that was.
She was captivating in that role, and it launched her career, and I think fairly.
Right.
And then she used up all that goodwill.
All right, to be fair, I've not been tracking Kate Hudson deeply enough, nor do I care about her career enough.
Well, you dropped the nepotism bomb on her.
Yeah, well, she is the daughter of a extremely famous actress. That does not hurt in Hollywood.
One day your sons will be right. Their father will be a famous NFL analyst that all over television and the silver screen possibly as well.
Yeah.
Will you want them to be judged just because of your success?
Yes.
Dan, before we move on from this, J.J. Watt actually already heard this, and he has a response for you.
What?
All I know is you mess with me, you got problems. That's all I know.
Whatever, bro. Come at me. Sitting to my left is Berger. Berger is the producer.
I have a first name, for crying out loud.
Do you?
Yeah.
I thought it was like a Madonna type.
Pele.
We each have little names Dan likes to give us.
Okay.
I'm the boss, and you can just be Berger.
Michael Berger is his God-given name, or his parents at least. He is the producer of Path to the Draft, which airs Monday to Friday on NFL Network at
6 Eastern.
6 Eastern, 3 Pacific. Welcome back to the Around the NFL podcast.
I thought we were doing once every 2 years. Now it's once. This has been once every 2 months. Did you guys scheduling error or what happened?
Hashtag progress.
It's April.
I'm not complaining. By the way,
it's a compliment towards your epic performance last time.
Oh, thank you.
All remember it.
Yeah, there were dozens of people told me about it.
So. Berger, first off, you're a single man in Los Angeles. At least not married. Have you found the same issues that Wes has, that women are obsessed with height?
Well, I will say, what did Axel Foley say in Beverly Hills Cop 2? 6 foot women grow on trees in California. So there is a proliferation of height.
Tall women.
A lot of tall women.
And that's fair. And tall women don't want to date.
Not who I'm talking about. I'm talking about 4'11" women who won't date men under 6'3".
That's quite a disparity if it's four. That's what you're talking about. 20 inches there.
it's a disease out here.
Yeah, I don't know. But Wes's point, I think, does have some merit.
Thank you.
Yeah. You're happily coupled.
I am happily coupled, yes.
How tall is she?
She's about 5'6", pretty standard.
Va-va-voom.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay.
So.
So we're going to talk draft with Berger in a couple of minutes. But before we do that, we do want to touch on, and Mark, I'm surprised, this was your idea. You are not a fan of the NBA during the regular season, but there is a regular season game taking place tonight at Staples Center here in Los Angeles. It is the Kobe Bryant finale of his 20 season career, I believe. He played for 20 years, all with the LA Lakers. And so you said, this is what we should talk about, Mark.
Well, okay. I mean, I'm not a Kobe fan, but I said it might not be a bad episode early on when it's April 13th to maybe
spin
off Kobe Bryant.
All right. So what Mark said, that wasn't quite the setup I was looking for, but who is the NFL equivalent of Kobe Bryant, a player that was undeniably talented, tremendously successful, but really viewed by many people as a villain or someone that is hard to like? Who's the NFL guy who makes you think that way?
Now, hold on a second. I thought it was from any sport. That's
any sport.
Any sport.
All right, any sport.
Is there an NFL guy, though? I don't think there is an NFL guy
I struggle.
NFL feels more – there's not a uniform opinion about things. Like Michael Vick popped to my mind, but then again, Michael Vick's – you know, when at the height of his dog fighting stuff. But then again, Michael Vick's one of the most popular players of his generation. So, like, Ben Roethlisberger, for Browns fans, certainly throughout the Midwest, but I don't know if he was universally reviled. Not a lot of
the only guy that popped in my head, and it was, I quickly sort of rebuffed it, was T.O. Just for the sheer in your face way that he played, and kind of as polarizing as
that's good. Yeah, it was good.
That was the only one I could think of in the NFL.
I mean, is it a question of who do we love to hate? Because that's a different question in the NFL.
Yeah.
Do you have a player that you like rooting against? I'll admit that Peyton Manning, for much of his career, I did. And certainly that's my Patriots fandom. Yeah. That the Patriots never really had a rival other than Peyton Manning was a rival. It wasn't really the Colts or the Broncos. It was Peyton Manning.
That's where I would go with this anyway. And let me unpack this for a minute. So to me, Kobe Bryant and Alex Rodriguez are inextricably linked.
That was mine.
They came of age in the 90s when sports exploded financially and image-wise. And at 18, 19 years old in the mid to late 90s, they are told by their handlers it's about image. You have to project this image. And neither of those athletes built a base of character. Like, if you read The Education of Alex Rodriguez by J.R. Moringer, a great long form, there's no soul there. There's no base of Alex Rodriguez has no personality, no character.
Doesn't Kobe feel like the opposite of that?
No, I don't think so. I think he was too busy wrapped up trying to be Michael Jordan for years and trying to protect this image. And I think Peyton Manning Peyton Manning came of age in that era too, and he was all about spin control. Extremely about spin control and image early in his career. And I don't think he's a reviled star or anything, but I see those three guys as coming from that kind of deriving from that era of professional sports exploding money-wise and image-wise.
The interesting person to put in that category as well, and I feel like they're all in that same era, is Jeter, who is for some, you know, the polar opposite is just, I mean, revered by almost everybody who in baseball, pop culture. A lot of it has to do with what he did off the field, you know, his exploits there as well. But it's an interesting sort of dichotomy when you have an A-Rod or a Kobe and then a guy like, who, again, same era, same time.
Yeah, I always thought there was more substance to Jeter.
I agree.
But Kobe, I totally disagree. Kobe seems like a very smart individual. He certainly has an interesting background. He has strong views on things. He seems insanely calculating. He doesn't seem very likable, but that seems different to me than an A-Rod and maybe even a Jeter, which just seems kind of like a black hole.
Like, Kobe was
not,
like A-Rod.
There's not a lot there, you know. Whereas Kobe, I think there's a lot there. It just you just might not like it.
No, I think early in his career, he was like A-Rod in that he had to take a pull before he would say any statement.
I would go from the NFL angle, Big Ben, because I see that there was an off-the-field incident that almost caused the Steelers to think about parting ways with him. But we also are in a time where attention span is so brief that that's completely forgotten at this point. And his career and who he is as a player has – I respect him now. So I don't hate
him. Well, he also never really captured the zeitgeist like a guy like Kobe. Or I think Vic is a good guy to look at in a lot of ways because he, like Kobe, came in with a ton of hype. He was even involved with a draft day trade. He came into the league, then lived up to the hype, was a star, then had legal problems that changed the way people looked at him forever. But as personalities, they seem like very different people. So that's where that kind of falls apart. But I think Kobe is kind of, on some level, to me, one of a kind. I mean, that is
Michael,
that successful.
I mean, the other answer for me is Michael Jordan. I love to hate Michael Jordan.
Really?
I was surprised when I learned.
Oh, yeah.
I think a lot of the country kind of jumped on and just became Bulls fans. I never got to that point. I always hated him, always rooted against
him.
Always rooted against the Don Bull because I was a Celtics fan. Not that they were rivals, certainly not by the end of it, but at the beginning, you just don't like the guy that's on top. That's
See,
natural.
I think for me, because Michael Jordan came into bloom when I was in around fifth grade, and I have like notebooks from that time just filled of drawing Michael Jordan pictures, and I fell in love with the NBA for a period of time because of him. Even though I ended up being a Knicks fan, Jordan was fascinating to watch. I loved the guy.
I grew up in a city that didn't have the NBA in Cincinnati, and to me, I always thought anyone was suspect if they hated Jordan.
Really?
Yeah, like, what's wrong with you that you don't like watching Michael Jordan play?
Well,
it's like a contrarian
for a rival team that was beating your team.
Right, if you're from Boston, I get that. But in Cincinnati, like, how much of a contrarian are you trying to be to not like Michael Jordan?
We would go up every year. We would drive up I-65 and I would see one Michael Jordan game a year and make sure it was on my list to do with my parents. By the way, little known fact, do you guys know what my middle name is?
Jordan.
It is Jordan.
I was
wow.
Oh, I thought it might be Michael Berger.
No. You're Michael Jordan Berger?
Michael Jordan Berger.
Wow.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And you were born, obviously, before Michael Jordan was famous.
Yeah, he was like 8 years old. Oh. He was, yeah, so.
Oh, I thought
that
it
just
after.
Changed.
No, I was
the
not
way
named after
so
Michael
much.
Jordan. That would be weird.
Michael Jordan Berger.
That would be weird. By the way, real quick,
have you? Felt
that's going
like
to be your
it,
new podcast.
Has
name.
That been tough to live up to?
Do you know what? Do you know what?
For people that don't know what you look like, and why would they?
Yeah, I don't look nothing
you know,
like Michael Jordan.
Yeah, you don't. You don't look like Jordan.
I find
your glasses alone.
Right.
Hand size.
How would you?
Well, you can choose who to share it with.
I find that usually when I travel, like when I go internationally and I pull out my passport and it takes them a second and it's always like, oh, Michael Jordan, oh, and then it becomes a whole thing. And
like
everyone thinks it's
oh
a
burger eye roll.
Yeah,
I bet,
and
like,
it's just,
oh,
yeah, it's just not
here
a,
we go again.
Your hair is somewhat similar to Jordan.
We do have similar hairlines, yes, or lack thereof in this case. But
all right.
Wait, by the way, before
yes.
we were talking about this in the newsroom, more compelling game tonight, Kobe or the Warriors game.
Warriors by far.
Warriors by far.
Kobe stopped being compelling when he stopped being good at basketball.
I know a lot of people listen to this afterwards, but it just seems like that's
they're
a greatness, and he's just –
if you could choose to be at one game, I would probably choose Kobe because you know he's going to jack up 40 shots, and maybe he gets hot and you see something crazy. Golden State's going to be up by 30 points.
Yeah,
it's
like watching Peyton Manning in the Super Bowl. Give me a break.
I don't know.
All right, so Berger, here we go. Here we go.
Let's talk draft.
Here's a seg – called Draft Pressure Points.
Sure.
With Berger.
And now it's pressure's on me, right?
Yeah, so.
Michael Jordan Berger.
There we go.
And
that's
never
your new pick.
Maybe I should have kept that one to myself.
Jordan Berger. And, yeah, we saw Berger in the lobby yesterday, and we said, what are we going to do? What are we going to talk about? We want to talk a little draft. And Berger, because he's an idea man, said, well, there's certain parts of the draft. Why don't you explain it?
You're a producer. You're
yeah.
The
no, I mean, listen, I'm not going to sit here and evaluate players. That's not certainly what I'm qualified to do. But I do think that there are interesting, you know, teams picking in certain spots of the draft that I think will dictate certainly the first round and how various teams not only pick after them, but kind of just change the complexion potentially of the first round with, you know, obviously it starts, I think, with the Browns at 2. Assuming, again, no one trades up and Tennessee holds on to the top spot, it starts with the Browns at 2, and there are some other interesting spots as we kind of move down the first
round. All right,
round.
So why don't we start with the Browns at 2?
Well, look, I mean, for a lot of these teams, it comes down to will they or won't they draft a quarterback? And
right.
Obviously, you know, did the RG3 signing take the Browns out of the mindset of drafting a quarterback? Who knows? Is it Wentz? Is it Goff? Do they like either one enough to sit at 2 and take quarterback? The argument for the Browns is, on one hand, sure, you need a franchise guy. Obviously, you don't think Josh McCown or RG3 is that guy moving forward. Having said that, we all know the Browns need help at a lot of different places and a lot of different levels of the field. So do they trade back and try to get more picks and maybe hope that a quarterback, if they like a quarterback, is there at 6 or 7? Do they think that Wentz, Goff, and Lynch are maybe the same guy and they move back even further to, you know, and hope that he's there at 15, middle of the first round? Whatever it is, they could either take the best player on their board, whether it's a Jalen Ramsey, a Miles Jack, somebody like that, and certainly shore up what was not a very good defense last year. Or they take a quarterback, and that will have a major domino effect on what happens, you know, with Cowboys at 4, the Niners at 7, even the Rams at 15, and that'll kind of start the ball rolling, I think, in the first round a little bit.
Mark, how would you feel if the Browns did not come out of this draft with a quarterback?
I think, the fan of me would be disappointed, but I'd be more interested to find out who made that decision, because the sense that, I mean, we're getting word that, you know, Pep Hamilton, the offensive coordinator, really wants Goff,
right.
But maybe Hugh Jackson does too, but maybe the front office just wants to compile picks. Well, Cleveland's made a cottage industry of trading down. You didn't get Julio Jones, and you ended up getting Phil Taylor, who's not on the team anymore. How many times we do this? I think you got to swing at a quarterback if Hugh Jackson loves one of them. If they aren't sold on one, you're right. That glass half full is you could pick any position, and it would be a position of need in Cleveland.
Right, right.
But I am not buying the idea, and look, it's on our website, that it's coming out in the last few days, that the Browns are not in love necessarily with anyone to take at number 2, and so that they're more than willing, they're trying to trade out. There's a lot of smoke that they're going to trade out. You got the number 2 pick in the draft, and by all accounts, these two quarterbacks are worthy top 10 quarterback picks. So it seems crazy to me that they would not view either one of those quarterbacks as a franchise quarterback. I don't care that they're number two or number eight. Either they're franchise quarterbacks or they're not. And if they deem one of those two guys are franchise quarterback, you have to take them.
There's no better way to change your team entirely.
Take one next year. Just keep taking them.
Yep.
And don't you have to kind of, with the new regime, link yourself, for better or for worse, inextricably to somebody,
a
face
of
the franchise, and kind of just run with it?
Jeremy Tunsil, who will play right tackle for 3 years. Right.
Laramie Tunsil.
Like what Greg said. Jeremy's his cousin. That's his cousin.
You take one of these guys early. You get him in the lineup. Don't be starting RG3 deep into the season. See what he can do. If there's a lot of bad juju around the guy, you're going to have a top five pick next year too, probably. Get the best quarterback then. Just figure, get the quarterback. They got to get the quarterback.
You hit it and everything changes. You want to don't get too smart.
Right.
All right, let's move on now.
So I think the Browns at two are interesting, and then you go right down to the Cowboys at four, and this is kind of the million-dollar question.
Pressure points. Okay, go ahead.
A little creepy, but
okay. Yeah, no, that's cool.
That's okay.
Pressure points.
Million-dollar question in this draft is, will the Cowboys take a quarterback at four?
Much pressure.
Now it's really creepy. Yeah. Whether you believe Jerry Jones or not, a lot of the scuttlebutt seems to be that they are really looking at either, even if Wentz or Goff is taken at two, that they are looking at the other one potentially at four. Now, look, they say Tony Romo is their guy. He's going to be there for the next however many years he has left, 3, 4, 5, who knows, maybe more. But they don't have that quarterback of the future, certainly. And if, we've been saying all year on Path of the Draft, if you – think one of these guys is that franchise quarterback, regardless of whether you have Romo on your roster or not, you take a quarterback at four. If not, they probably go edge rusher with a Joey Bosa. Miles Jack could still be there, maybe a DeForest Buckner. But it's really – that to me is the most interesting question of the first round, is what the Cowboys do it for, and specifically, will they take a quarterback?
And if you're Dallas, you want to – it's like in Uno, you get the draw four card and you blow the opponent up. Like, you want to be one of those teams.
Uno reference.
Like, I don't know where that came. Like, the Packers and the Colts, where you have a franchise quarterback for a decade plus, and then you just insert the next
one
without any nonsense in between.
And, and if there is a scenario where the Cowboys have the choice of any quarterback on the board with that pick, I think they would live to regret the day. I don't know what's going on with Tony Romo and his health at this stage. People have now forgotten, by the way, and I wrote this in a mailbag that we published yesterday, he has this clavicle thing that he got the Mumford & Sons surgery on. And now people have forgotten that he has a back injury that can go on him at any time, and that could end his career too. So he has two potentially career-ending injuries that can pop up at any time. You got to get the next guy. Kellen Moore is not the next guy. You know who the third quarterback on the roster is, Wes?
Yeah.
It's like – it's a made-up name. It's like,
yeah, he's got a funny name. Strongs or something?
Strong, something like that. It's like, he's not the guy. I feel like they would make a huge mistake not to grab
Jameel Showers.
Couldn't you just?
He's a real human being who has achieved a lifelong dream to make it to the NFL. The entire Showers family is proud of Jameel. You're just mocking him.
All right, sorry about that. All right, let's move down.
I mean, real quick, couldn't they just take a quarterback at the top of the second round?
Right. This is a draft where supposedly that there'll be three quarterbacks maybe taken in the second round. Yeah. I it's an interesting one for the Joneses too, because it's a definite. Are we still trying to win a Super Bowl with Tony Romo? You would think yes. They have not lost sight of that. Do we really have the patience to take a quarterback versus a guy like an edge rusher like Buckner or Ezekiel Elliott maybe? You put him in the backfield and you just Jerry Jones gets excited about that and tries to win the Super Bowl right now. That seems more like the Cowboys move.
That feels Cowboys.
And you got to think they're chomping at the bit after what happened last year. Just a lost season. Completely lost. True. They don't want to, they are going all in, you would think, this year. And drafting a quarterback for a long-term play doesn't necessarily fit what they
and I know the money isn't crazy at the top anymore, but it's still a lot of money if you take a quarterback four and you have Tony Romo as the top, top paid quarterback in the league. Just about that's a lot.
But there's got to be voices in the building saying no. We need something else.
But to Wes's point, couldn't you take a quarterback in the second round if they want to go edge rusher or defensive tackle in the if that's a need for them? This draft, this is by far the strength of the draft, is defensive ends and defensive tackle. So if they think there's that much difference between Wentz and Goff,
I don't think Wentz or Goff will be there when Dallas picks. That's my prediction.
Well, yeah, and they may not be. So it's going to be – it'll be interesting. But that to me, that's a really interesting part of the draft.
Berger, give us another pressure point.
I think you got to go down
– keep going.
I'm just going to crawl under the table here. Yeah. Niners at seven. Because, again, it's will one of those quarterbacks still be there? And if they are – do they take one? You know, they have a lot of needs, obviously, up front at the offensive line. Linebackers, they're not going to take a linebacker at seven. Certainly, you wouldn't think. But, you know, they've...
Well, that's 7-8.
The Niners at
corridor.
7 and the Eagles at 8.
You know, you're rounding the corner. If you
like
get
the I-10 corridor.
The Eagles are doing something strange. I mean, we talked about this a little bit. Just that they're real... They're working out Wentz, I believe, today, Wednesday, as we're taping this. They're working out all the guys. They're in all these rumors. I don't quite buy that, but I think if you're really interested in one of those two guys, it's hard to imagine really any scenario they get past 7-8.
Yeah, and they also
someone will trade to Philadelphia at 8, I think, to take the second guy if they're not off the board.
They also love Ezekiel Elliott. I mean, that's something that's been connected to them for a long time, and that's, you know, we saw Todd Gurley go in the top 10 last year. By all accounts, Ezekiel Elliott is kind of, you know, a very similar. Different styles, but talent.
Yeah, there's whispers of Philly going up to number 2 to take Elliott there, so that Dallas can't.
Don't the 49ers seem, and I would throw the Rams in this, and maybe they're a pressure point at 15 too. I would put them.
Do I sound as creepy as Greg?
Creepier.
It's a nice combination of creepy voices.
Okay. I would think that they're about as likely as anyone to make a big time trade because desperation. Equals trades. And the Rams, especially at 15, can't you just see them knowing that Jeff Fisher is the first coach since Dave Shula to make it to a fifth season without a winning record, and Les Snead has never had a winning record, and they're moving to L.A., and you just need a face of the franchise, and they just give up their 15th pick, they give up next year's first. Who knows? You throw in Michael Brockers or something, and you move up wherever you need to move up.
They just got to go 7-9, Greg.
Jeff Fisher
do the opposite RG3. They do it basically
in reverse.
And then
Keenum is their starting quarterback still.
Jeff Fisher has never been condescendingly patted on the head by one of his players while giving him a lecture.
Oof.
Well, Dave Shula. Dave Shula?
Remember that?
Yes.
That is not a guy to ever be connected to historically on any level, Dave Shula. All right, Berger, let's hear about another team under pressure.
Well, I think the Bears at 11 are interesting because, again, if for some reason, let's say the Browns don't take a quarterback. Let's say the Cowboys don't take a quarterback, okay? And let's say, for all intents and purposes, the Niners take Goff or Wentz at 7.
Okay.
The Eagles go offensive line, let's say, which is a big need for them at 8. Then the Bears at 11, you know, some team either is going to want that last quarterback, that second quarterback, to, you know, and worried that maybe the Rams take him at 15, or do the Bears, who don't really have a quarterback of the future behind Jay Cutler, who I believe is entering the last year of his contract. Is that correct? Someone check me on that.
I think he signed to.
It might be the last year of guaranteed money.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is. But either way, you know, Cutler's not exactly the most reliable option at the position that we've seen in the last couple of years. And maybe they take a quarterback at 11. I mean, again, it's the first half of the draft is where these first two quarterbacks end up, and that really will affect what so many other teams
I'd be shocked, if they got that far. But New Orleans, Ian Rappaport mentioned New Orleans as a team that is major interest in a quarterback too.
Right.
So they're number 12. So none of these guys are getting that low, but if they do, it's over.
And that's where you could see the movement. Again, if one of those guys is still on the table, do the Rams move up a couple of spots? Do the Saints jump up a couple of spots? Do the Jets move from 20? You know, if they're not sold, if Ryan Fitzpatrick isn't done yet and they don't think Bryce Petty or Geno Smith is the answer, do they move up? There's a lot of play that could happen in those sort of middle 10 picks if one of those guys is still on the board.
Jay Cutler wouldn't be on the Bears if anyone had taken him in a trade last year.
Right.
No one wanted him.
Right.
Berger, give us one more team that's feeling the pressure.
Well, I'll give you two quickly because they're both similar sort of dynamics. So at the end of the first round, you have the Texans at 22 and the Steelers at 25. What's interesting about those two teams is if you look at the draft order starting at 22, you have the Texans at 22, the Vikings at 23, and the Bengals at 24, all three of whom you could argue their first biggest need is a wide receiver.
I would argue that.
So – and you have, you know, these receivers, you might not see the first one taken, whether it's Laquon Treadwell or Corey Coleman or Josh Doctson or whoever it is. They may not be taken until right around, you know, 18, 19, somewhere in the back half of the first round. So you could see a run on receivers there. Maybe all three of those teams, Texans, Vikings, Bengals, taking receivers. Or if they're gone before the Bengals pick, then the Bengals, you know, so you could see one of those teams kind of get shut out if there's a little run on receivers there in that early 20s. And then the Steelers
don't want to get caught at the end of the old
the run
fantasy
exactly
tight end run.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like
a, get on top of that.
It's like a crappy it's like a crappy closer run in a baseball fantasy baseball draft. You don't want the JJ Hoovers or any of those guys.
You want to get Hoovered.
Yeah. Anyway,
you're
so
the only person in this room that knows who JJ Hoover.
Well, he's the closer.
Maybe
for the
come on.
Yeah.
That's my team.
Thank you. And then the Steelers at 25 quickly. Steelers at 25. Seahawks at 26. Packers at 27. You could argue their biggest need each is a cornerback, and there's a lot of corners who we've seen mocked at the end of the first round. A William Jackson and Eli Apple, Artie Burns, those guys.
We got to run.
You could see very interesting kind of positional runs in the mid and late 20s as we kind of get through the end.
Steelers need to trade Big Ben to the Jets for Darrell Revis.
I'd do that in a second.
That both teams needs filled.
Well, Berger, you've done it again. You came on the show and you shocked the world.
Knocked it out of the park. And now you know my middle name.
Yeah. What did we learn? Michael Jordan Berger. He has to deal with that a lot. Yep. It's not always fun.
Nope. But this is fun.
Yeah, what do we already know? You were a former Wheel of Fortune contestant.
Yes, that's right. Champion.
Champion.
Let's not sell it short here.
Dating a woman that is somewhere between 5'6", 5'7".
Uh-huh. Yep. Yes, and a very attractive woman, I should say. So good job there, Berger.
Thank you.
Passionate Bengals fan.
Yes.
So you're a man that feels pressure for your team to win in January. So there's a lot of stuff going on.
How'd that work out last year?
Yeah.
Same way it always does.
Yeah.
And
you just had to get that in there, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Last but not least, he's the producer of Path to the Draft.
That's right.
Monday to Friday.
6 p.m. Eastern. Tune in. It's going to be, what's 15 days out now until the 2016 NFL Draft.
So close.
2 weeks away.
You going to be in Chicago?
I will be here sort of overseeing our studio coverage as we lead up to the big day on April 28th and then the rest of the weekend.
It's weird that Path to the Draft, it makes sense, but – there's Path to the Draft after the draft, too.
Yeah. It should be Path from the Draft.
Right.
Yeah.
At that point, the after name the draft. Is confusing.
I think you got to work on the branding a little bit.
Yeah, I'll see what I can do. It's just one preposition change.
It's a graphic.
Or just like the Path to the Draft is over. It's the Path to the Next Draft.
I believe it's technically called those are called the Path to the Draft recap shows. So there is a little bit of, subtle
it's
nuance.
It's still a
there.
Tad cumbersome.
It is.
Is that when DJ goes on vacation for like 9 months?
That's after that week. The week after the draft, we will not see Daniel.
That's on Wes's radar.
And it also does remind me of the other show you produce, Around the NFL.
Yes.
Confusing that they also named this podcast Around the NFL. And for so long, there was no link between the two programs. We've made
but
strides.
Now
well, maybe that recently. Maybe that means you just have to have me on more. That's all.
Perhaps. Listen,
Glasnost.
You are the bridge
between
the two programs.
Michael Berger. I appreciate you having me on.
What's your Twitter handle again?
Mikey BTV.
Oh, listen to that handle.
Mikey BTV.
Mikey BTV. Follow him. He knows what he's talking about. Mike Berger. Michael Jordan Berger. Before we get out of here, Greg, can I get an update on the iTunes challenge? Of course, we've been asking all of our listeners to leave 5-star reviews and 5-star ratings and nice or bad reviews. We don't care about that. Just to see if we can goose Apple's rating system. Where are we going with
that? Has not made much of an impact. But we have left a lot of comments, and that alone is exciting and important because I don't like to see – you kind of look at how many people have left ratings for different podcasts, and you can say, okay, that one's bigger than that one. And so a lot of people have been leaving – the comments, and that I appreciate. I think it's goosed up about 100 since we asked.
There are 5 tweets on Twitter with the hashtag iTunes Challenge.
Hashtag iTunes Challenge. You got to spread the word.
That's 5 more than I thought there would be.
It's caught fire.
We also need, I think even just as important as that is telling your friends to go subscribe. Hey, you guys like the NFL? Oh, yeah. You like podcasts? Oh, yeah. How about you try the Around the NFL podcast, friend?
Hey, we got something
for you. Go subscribe to that. Little word of mouth. Because I think the new subscribers – that's always big.
That's good.
Tell a buddy, phone a friend.
We'll be back tomorrow. Very special Around the NFL podcast. Schedule release day.
Oh, yeah.
Schedule dropping. So we'll have a full breakdown.
Feel the buzz in the air.
All the schedule heat.
And that'll be posted the minute the schedule is out. So we work at the NFL, and we'll get it a little early. We'll be able to pre-tape it. And so the second that schedule release is on, you check it out and you listen to the podcast.
Do you ever listen to our podcast?
All the time.
You do?
Sure.
Who's your favorite
Michael
person
Jordan Berger.
Who's my favorite person on the show?
Yeah. And you can't go Lindsay.
No, I'd say Colleen.
I probably would say Colleen.
Connie Fox.
Of the core four.
Just say Mark.
This is not going to end well.
He's looking for it. Give it to him.
We work together. Come on. This is not – there's no upside.
No one's going to be offended if you lie and say Mark.
Say Mark. Lie and say all
four. Don't lie.
All right, that's it.
Isn't that a wrap? Can we get this?
Yeah, that's okay. It.
Thanks.
This is we'll be back on Thursday with the schedule release special. Until then, this is Dan Hansa signing off for The Quiet Storm, The Mailman, literally Michael Jordan.
There we go.
And the boss, and of course, the Irishman behind the glass. Till Thursday!